Usually, when you deal with a standard financial vehicle, there's this expectation of transparency.
You're right, like a glass piggy bank.
Exactly. You put the money in, you see it sitting there, and you break it open when you need it.
But step into the world of retirement planning and annuities, and, well, that glass piggy bank turns into a concrete vault.
Yeah.
A vault buried at the center of a maze and wrapped in just miles of legal tape.
And that vault is exactly what we are cracking open today. We're diving into a stack of sources centered around a really comprehensive training manual for the Wisconsin Annuity Best Interest Training.
Right, specifically focusing on the 2021 Wisconsin Act 260.
Yes. And our mission for this deep dive is to basically demystify one of the most notoriously complex financial products on the market, the annuity.
Because it really is complex. I mean, the complexity is kind of the feature, not a bug.
Right. And we are going to look at how a massive shift in state law is trying to dismantle the hidden traps, the staggering fees, and this is the crazy part. Even this disturbing practice of investors taking out financial bets on terminally ill patients.
Yeah, that part is wild.
Yeah.
But, you know, the legal framework in this space has essentially been forced to evolve just to keep up with the mechanics of the products themselves.
Right.
So before we can even understand the sweeping new consumer protection laws, we have to look at the architecture of the core product.
Absolutely. So at its foundation, an annuity is a contract you make with a life insurance company.
Right.
You hand over a premium, that money grows on a tax-deferred basis, and eventually it can be distributed back to you as a guaranteed income stream until the day you die.
You're basically buying a private pension.
Yeah, I mean, you are buying longevity insurance, so you just don't outlive your cash.
But the sources reveal this massive disconnect between what the product was designed to do and how it's actually used in the real world.
Which is so fascinating.
Right, because the vast majority of modern buyers completely ignore that guaranteed income for life feature.
They never actually flip the switch.
Exactly. They never flip the switch to turn the accumulated value into a lifetime payout. Instead, they just use annuities as these giant tax-deferred holding tanks.
Right, just letting the funds compound over decades before taking lump sum withdrawals.
Which fundamentally changes how we need to view the structure of these contracts.
And what makes an annuity so complicated, but also kind of amazing, is that you can splinter the roles to engineer different tax and payout strategies across generations.
Yeah, there are a lot of moving parts.
Right. So you have the insurer investing the money, then you have the contract owner who holds all the power to withdraw funds or change terms.
Right.
You have the annuitant whose actual biological life expectancy dictates the payout math, and then you have the beneficiary.
Right, who's just waiting for the payout?
Exactly. I mean, in a normal investment account, you are just the owner. But with an annuity, it's like a financial Russian nesting doll.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, because you could be all three of those roles simultaneously, or, you could pull the doll apart.
Right, like a family trust could be the owner.
Yep, a spouse could be the annuitant serving as the biological measuring stick.
And the kids could be the beneficiaries.
Exactly.
But splintering those roles gives you tremendous flexibility for estate planning. But it also it creates unique risk profiles for the insurance company issuing the contract.
Let's talk about that risk, because unlike life insurance, most annuities do not require any kind of medical exam,
Right, none at all.
which is crazy. If there is no underwriter checking my blood pressure or, my family history, the insurer is flying completely blind on my life expectancy.
They are.
They must be taking a massive gamble on how long they might be on the hook to pay me.
Well, the gamble looks terrifying on an individual level, but it actually vanishes at scale.
Really? How so?
So, the insurer's risk with an annuity is primarily investment related, not health related, because of the mathematical pooling of risk.
Yeah.
Think about the inverse relationship here. With traditional life insurance, the company is managing mortality risk.
Right. They're terrified you might get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Exactly. Which forces them to pay out $1 million death benefit after you only paid like 1 month of premiums.
Yeah, that would be bad for them.
Right. So they need your medical records to mitigate that. But with an annuity, the company is managing longevity risk. They were worried you might live to be 110 years old, forcing them to send you a check every single month for 4 decades.
Right. So if one person lives to 110, the company loses money on that specific contract.
Exactly. But when they pool thousands of policyholders together, actuarial science dictates that life expectancies average out with staggering precision.
So they know exactly how many people are going to pass away in a given year.
Pretty much. So the real existential threat to the insurer isn't how long you live. It's whether they can earn enough yield on their own investments to keep making those guaranteed payments to the pool.
Wow. And because the insurer is on the hook for that massive decades-long longevity risk, they have to carefully engineer how your money grows behind the scenes to actually afford those payouts.
Exactly.
And how they engineer that growth directly dictates your level of risk as a consumer.
Right. And the sources break this down into immediate versus deferred annuities. Immediate is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
You hand over lump sum, the payouts start within a year.
Simple enough.
But deferred annuities are where the complexity just explodes.
Yeah.
Because your money sits and grows for years before you even touch it.
And regulators heavily scrutinize these deferred contracts because there are three distinct mechanisms for growth, right? Fixed, indexed, and variable.
Let's start with fixed. Fixed annuities seem like the most straightforward protection against market volatility.
Right. The insurer guarantees a minimum rate of return, maybe like 3 or 4%.
Yeah.
Even if the S&P 500 drops 20% in a year, my account still grows by that guaranteed rate.
Right.
But to guarantee 3% in a collapsing market without going bankrupt, the insurer must be locking that capital into incredibly boring, highly rated corporate or government bonds.
Exactly. They use those safe bonds to subsidize that floor. They are entirely reliant on a concept called the spread.
The spread, right.
Yeah. So the insurance company takes your premium, places it in their general account, and buys long-term high-quality bonds. Let's say those bonds yield 7%.
Okay.
They credit your fixed annuity with a guaranteed 4%, and they just keep the 3% difference.
Oh, wow. So that spread covers their administrative costs and profit.
Right. Their reserves, profit margin, everything. You take on zero investment risk. The insurance company takes it all.
Then you step up to indexed annuities, which act as sort of a hybrid.
Yeah.
Your money's growth is tied to the performance of a major market index, but the insurer still provides a floor.
Right. So if the market crashes, you don't lose your principal. You just get a 0% return for that year.
But the house always takes a cut to pay for that downside protection. So they deliberately handicap your upside using participation rates and caps.
And the math on those handicaps is where consumers often feel misled if the agent doesn't explain it properly.
Right.
Let's say the market index goes up 10% in a given year. If your contract has an 80% participation rate,
you only participate in 80% of that growth.
Exactly. So instead of a 10% gain, you get 8%.
Okay, that makes sense.
But on top of that, they might apply an interest rate cap of 7%.
Oh, man.
So even though your 80% participation brought you to 8%, the hard cap slams you down to 7%.
Wow. And the insurer just uses the rest of those actual market gains to buy the complex options contracts that guarantee your floor.
You got it.
Which brings us to the most aggressive flavor, variable annuities, high risk, high reward.
Oh, yeah.
Your money doesn't go into the insurer's general account. It gets diverted into separate sub-accounts that are basically just mutual funds. And there is absolutely no guaranteed minimum return on the investment itself. If the market tanks, your account value tanks. You bear 100% of the investment risk.
Right. It's all on you.
But wait, if variable annuities have no guaranteed returns and I'm taking on all the downside risk anyway, why wouldn't I just bypass the insurance company entirely?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. Like, why not just avoid their administrative fees and buy an index fund in a standard brokerage account?
Well, the unique value proposition of a variable annuity hinges on a specific mechanism called the mortality and expense charge, or the M&E fee.
Okay.
Yes, you are paying significantly higher fees than a standard Vanguard or Fidelity mutual fund. But that M&E charge funds a guaranteed minimum death benefit for your heirs.
Okay. Totally insulated from market performance.
Exactly. If you invest $200,000 and a catastrophic recession hits right before you die, dropping your actual account value to, say, $120,000.
The M&E guarantee kicks in.
Right. It forces the insurance company to make up the difference. Your beneficiaries still inherit the original $200,000.
Wow. So you are basically paying a premium to place an insurance wrapper around a volatile investment.
Exactly. While retaining the right to eventually convert that fluctuating balance into a guaranteed lifetime payout.
But those safety nets, like the guaranteed minimums and the death benefits, are incredibly expensive for the insurer to maintain.
Massively expensive.
They are tying up vast amounts of capital, which is why they have to lock you into the contract with just sheer financial force.
Right.
The complexity of these products creates a breeding ground for consumer mistakes and outright predatory behavior.
And the lack of liquidity is usually the most jarring reality for a new buyer. I mean, annuities are designed as decades-long commitments.
Yeah.
If you attempt to access your own money early, you trigger surrender charges.
Right.
These are steep penalties designed to recoup the massive upfront commissions the insurer paid the agent who sold you the policy.
Yeah, and they usually last for the first 7 to 10 years of the contract. It functions exactly like a hotel minibar.
Yeah, exactly.
The money is sitting right there in your room. It looks very tempting, but the moment you touch it prematurely, you are hit with exorbitant, disproportionate fees.
Yeah, and the sources show these surrender charges scaling down over time. If you cancel or withdraw heavily in year one, the insurer might confiscate 7 or 8% of your total account value.
Which is huge.
Right. Year two drops to 6%, year three to 5%, until the fee finally burns off.
Though, to be fair, contracts do include a free withdrawal provision, right?
Yes.
Allowing you to access maybe 10% of your account value annually without triggering the penalty. But still, the vast majority of your capital is heavily restricted.
And if the surrender charge doesn't devastate your withdrawal, the IRS will.
Oh, don't get me started on the taxes.
The tax implications are brutal, and it goes back to a federal law passed in 1982 called PFRA. Because before TEFRA, people were treating deferred annuities like high-yield checking accounts, just pulling out their tax-free principal whenever they wanted.
And Congress didn't like that.
No, they didn't. Congress stepped in and changed the taxation of annuity withdrawals to a LIFO system, last in, first out.
And the LIFO math is exactly what trips up so many retirees.
Yeah.
Let's say you invest a $100,000 lump sum into an annuity. Over 5 years, it performs well and grows to $140,000.
Okay.
So you have $40,000 in pure interest earnings. Suddenly, you have a medical emergency and you need $20,000. You might assume you can just withdraw $20,000 of your original already taxed $100,000 principal.
Right, which would be tax-free.
Exactly. But under the last in, first out rule, the IRS dictates that the very last dollars that grew in the account are the very first dollars you pull out.
Yep.
That entire $20,000 withdrawal is classified as interest earnings, meaning it is 100% taxable as ordinary income.
It's brutal. And Congress also added an age-based penalty to further discourage using annuities as short-term shelters.
Right, the 59 and a half rule.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you are under the age of 59 and a half when you make that withdrawal, the IRS applies an additional 10% early withdrawal penalty directly on top of the income tax you now owe.
It is a severe, compounding financial punishment for touching the funds before retirement age.
It really is.
But as punishing as the tax traps and surrender fees are, they're at least written into the contract.
That's true.
The sources outline a far more sinister practice that exploits the very architecture of the annuity. STATs, or stowaways.
Yeah. Stranger-originated annuity transactions.
Right. This involves predatory investors prowling hospice care centers to target vulnerable, terminally ill patients.
It's just a horrifying abuse of the guaranteed death benefit we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
These investors approach a terminally ill patient and offer them a small upfront cash payment. Maybe a few thousand dollars.
Oh.
In exchange, the patient signs the paperwork to become the annuitant on a new variable annuity contract.
Oh, wow.
Right. The investor funds the contract with their own money and names themselves as the beneficiary.
Because the annuity guarantees that the death benefit will at least equal the original investment.
Exactly. Plus potential bonuses or market gains.
Yeah.
So the investor has zero downside risk. When the patient passes away shortly after, the stranger legally pockets the payout.
They are basically weaponizing the product.
Yeah, turning it into a risk-free, morbid arbitrage on exactly how fast someone in hospice is going to die.
That is just incredibly dark. And when you combine that level of structural manipulation with the massive commissions agents can earn, you get a highly toxic environment for consumers.
You do.
If I'm a consumer looking at this landscape where the IRS is waiting to penalize me for touching my money, surrender charges lock me in for a decade, and predators are exploiting the contracts, it feels like the deck is entirely stacked against the buyer. And regulators clearly realized the old standards of oversight were completely failing to protect the public.
Right. And that structural imbalance is the exact catalyst for the regulatory overhaul detailed in our sources.
The Wisconsin Act.
Yes. On October 1st, 2022, 2021 Wisconsin Act 260 went into effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it fundamentally changed the legal standard of care in the state.
Okay.
the industry was forced to shift from a loose suitability standard to a strict best interest standard.
Right, because under the old suitability standard, an agent really only had to prove that an annuity wasn't a catastrophic fit for you.
Right, a very low bar.
Yeah, if you had decent savings and were within 20 years of retirement, a clever agent could argue that almost any annuity was suitable, even if it paid them a massive commission and locked your money up in terrible subaccounts.
Exactly. But Act 260 changes the baseline requirement. Producers absolutely cannot place their own financial interests ahead of the consumers.
And the law operationalizes that standard by forcing advisors to change exactly how they conduct a client meeting.
Yeah, under the new care obligation, an agent can't just pitch a product. They must build a comprehensive consumer profile.
Documenting your tax status, your risk tolerance, your liquidity needs.
All of it. And if they recommend replacing an existing annuity with a new one, Act 260 enforces a rigid 60-month look-back period to investigate the transaction history.
That look-back period is so important. It's specifically designed to stop the practice of churning.
Yes.
Let's look at the incentive structure for a bad actor. If you have a $500,000 annuity and the agent convinces you to cancel it and buy a slightly different one, they might earn a fresh 7% commission on that $500,000.
Which is a massive payday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While you were forced to pay a surrender penalty on the old contract, and that 7-year hotel minibar clock resets on the new one.
Yep.
So now, if you've had an exchange in the last 5 years, the agent is legally required to heavily document the math, proving that the new product will substantially benefit you over its lifetime, overriding the penalties.
And the transparency requirements also receive a massive upgrade through the disclosure obligation.
Right.
The days of handshake deals and vague assurances about how the agent gets paid are just over. Producers must provide a standardized signed document referred to in the training manual as Appendix A.
Okay, Appendix A.
Yeah, and it forces the agent to explicitly state their compensation structure. Are they earning a direct cash commission from the insurer? Are they charging you an hourly advisory fee?
Or are they receiving non-cash compensation like the insurance company paying for their office rent or marketing materials?
Exactly. Furthermore, they must disclose the limitations of their licensing. If an agent is only licensed to sell fixed annuities from one specific company, they have to tell you that up front.
Right. So your advice is restricted to their inventory, and you have a right to know that before you sign.
And Act 260 doesn't just target the agents on the ground. It targets the corporate culture of the insurance companies themselves.
This is huge.
Insurers are now legally mandated to identify and eliminate material conflicts of interest in their compensation structures.
So they have to ban sales contests, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No quotas or bonuses tied to the sale of specific annuities within a limited time frame.
So an insurance company can no longer tell an agency, hey, sell 20 variable annuities by the end of Q3 and we'll send your team to the Bahamas.
Right, because that inherently incentivizes agents to push a specific product regardless of the client's actual needs.
So the state is meticulously dismantling the structural biases that lead to bad advice.
Yes. And if a client refuses to provide their financial information or insists on buying an annuity that the agent explicitly warns against, the documentation obligation forces the agent to get signed refusal forms Appendix B and C.
Just proving they warn the consumer.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, let me challenge the scope of this law for a second. If the state explicitly mandates that the producer must act in my best interest and must put my financial welfare ahead of their commission, doesn't that legally elevate them to the status of a fiduciary? Like my attorney or a registered investment advisor?
You would think so, but no. The source text is highly specific on this point, and it's a vital distinction for consumers to grasp. The best interest standard and the care obligation do absolutely not create a fiduciary relationship.
Really?
Yeah. It is strictly a regulatory obligation tied to the specific transaction.
Okay. Because a true fiduciary has an ongoing legal duty to monitor your financial life, constantly ensuring your portfolio is optimized as market conditions change.
Exactly.
Under Act 260, an insurance producer's duty effectively ends once the policy is issued. They do not have to monitor your account's ongoing performance.
Right.
Moreover, they are not legally required to scour the entire global marketplace to find the absolute cheapest product in existence.
Right. They simply have to prove that out of the specific products they are actually licensed to sell, the one they recommended effectively addresses your profile without prioritizing their commission.
Wow. So the law forces a massive step up in transparency and accountability, but the ultimate responsibility for comprehension still rests with you, the consumer.
Absolutely. You cannot hand the agent your wallet and fall asleep at the wheel just because the words best interest are on the paperwork.
That makes total sense. So we started this deep dive looking at the fundamental architecture of the annuity, the strategic splintering of the owner, the annuitant, and the beneficiary.
Right.
And the reliance on statistical pooling to manage longevity risk. We explore the mechanics of the spread, participation rates, and the brutal LIFO tax trap waiting for anyone who tries to break the glass early.
Yeah, we covered a lot.
And we saw how Wisconsin's Act 260 is systematically forcing the industry to operate transparently, eliminating the hidden commissions and the churning that plagued the old suitability standard.
But despite the sheer complexity of these instruments, their core value proposition remains entirely unique in the financial world. They're one of the only mechanisms available that can contractually guarantee you will never outlive your cash flow, shifting the risk of a long life entirely onto the balance sheet of an institution.
Which brings us to a final philosophical shift to consider, building on a concept the training manual calls the accumulation mindset.
Oh, this is a great point.
We spend our entire working lives being conditioned to save. We judge our financial security by the absolute size of the pile of money we've built.
Right.
But as medical science advances and life expectancies stretch deeper into our 80s and 90s, the entire objective of retirement planning changes.
The real terrifying challenge of retirement isn't just accumulating the pile, it is engineering the distribution of that pile so the money doesn't run out before the oxygen does.
Exactly. You've spent 40 years focusing on the climb, maximizing returns, and embracing market risk. The question you have to ask yourself now is, are you psychologically prepared to shift your mindset from accumulating wealth to distributing it?
Stuff.
Drawing down your own net worth requires a completely different mental muscle.
It demands a total reevaluation of what security means. Security stops being about the highest possible return and starts being about the highest possible certainty.
And as you navigate that transition, remember the blueprint you now hold. The annuity space might feel like a concrete vault hidden inside a maze, but you now understand how surrender charges manipulate liquidity,
Right.
how the IRS views your withdrawals, and the exact disclosures you are legally owed under the best interest law. You have the leverage to demand that your financial products remain as transparent as a glass piggy bank.
Well said.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into your sources. Keep questioning the fine print. Demand to see that Appendix A, and we will see you next time.